This message comes from Wall Street Journal sponsor C3 AI. C3 Generative AI equips enterprises with verified, traceable answers. It's secure, hallucination-free, LLM agnostic, and IP liability-free. Learn more at c3.ai. This is Enterprise AI.
Welcome to Tech News Briefing. It's Thursday, May 25th. I'm Zoe Thomas for the Wall Street Journal. Despite age restrictions set by platforms, children under the age of 13 set up social media accounts. Governments around the world want to crack down on this amid growing fears over the kind of content this could expose young people to and the impact it could have on them. Those efforts could signal a sea change in how people of any age access the internet. Our European tech reporter Sam Schechner is going to join us to explain these efforts and why they are so difficult to enforce. But first, Twitter suffered technical issues during one of the platform's most high-profile moments. The live audio feature called Twitter Spaces, where Florida Governor Ron DeSantis was announcing his bid for president, suffered a number of technical glitches during the event, including the sound repeatedly cutting out. The event was set to be hosted by Twitter's owner, Elon Musk, but had to be moved to a different account. Twitter didn't comment. Netflix's password-sharing crackdown is upon us. According to the company, over 100 million viewers borrow passwords. Now, Netflix plans to charge $7.99 per month in the U.S. to have more than one household on an account. That price point, by the way, is between Netflix's new ad-supported tier and its basic ad-free tier. Our streaming reporter Sarah Krause says the change is Netflix's response to slower growth in an increasingly competitive market.
So Netflix is hoping that with this password-sharing crackdown, either it makes additional revenue from core account owners who pay for an extra member slot, or that people who lose access to the account that they had been sharing, fairly or not, will take out their own account. The other important thing to keep in mind is Netflix talked a little bit on its last earnings call about what the money that it's making from that ad tier. And they said, actually, the amount per member that they make from the ad supporting tier is higher than what they make from the standard tier, which costs $15.49. So that sort of shows you the value of getting more people onto that ad tier one way or another.
According to Netflix's help page, the streaming giant will detect whether someone is part of a household based on their devices, like smartphones or tablets, that are connected to the same internet network as a primary TV. If you're traveling, Netflix said the service will still work as long as the device used to log in has connected to the primary household's Wi-Fi within 30 days. Apple's iMessage platform is one of the most used communication apps for teens in the U.S., according to consumer data analytics company Measure Protocol. But it's not the only one. A lot of teens and young adults use Snapchat to send messages. In fact, some would rather hand out their Snapchat username than their phone number. But what is it about the app that has hooked so many young people? And will this habit of using social media to message stick with these users as they get older? With me to discuss that is our personal tech reporter, Dalvin Brown. Dalvin, to start with, why is Snapchat so popular as a messaging app for people under 25?
Younger people like a lot about Snapchat, particularly the ability to group message with 100 people to share their location with all of their friends and not have to manually go in and set that on their iPhone. What a few have told me was that they feel like sending a traditional text is too serious. And they say that also it's easy for them to find their friends because if they just type in, their friend's name, the app populates the person that they're looking for based off of mutual friends. It's also a generation that really values privacy and authenticity and instant messages, but also sharing photos and videos more often than actual text messages.
According to IDC, iPhones are the most popular phone for people 18 to 24 in the US. So if they want iPhones, which come with iMessage, why are they using Snapchat to communicate?
Yeah, there's a few reasons. One, it doesn't matter how badly you want an iPhone or if 90% of your friends want an iPhone or have an iPhone. If one person has an Android, it breaks the chain. You can no longer send group iMessages and include that person. And if you do, then the image quality in photos might be diminished. Videos might be shrunk. They may not see the same emoji reactions. They also don't have the ability to FaceTime from their Android. And so there's still limitations. Also, when you text someone, the text message still exists on their phone unless they intentionally go delete it or create some settings in their phone that like auto deletes texts over time. Whereas on Snapchat, everything you send disappears within 24 hours. And so for a generation that doesn't want to be held to who they were yesterday, you know, Snapchat is really appealing because the messages just, they just vanish.
We're talking about the apps that young people prefer, but I'm curious, how important are young people to Snap and Apple?
So what analysts tell me is that the reason that Snapchat and Apple and other messaging apps are so keenly interested in teens and young adults is because they represent the future adult population that's working and making money. And Snapchat has a premium tier where you can pay for more features to customize the app. On Apple Messages, you can use Apple Cash and you could get funneled into Apple's other products. So, you know, the idea is you get these people while they're young, then they're locked in for life.
All right, that was our personal tech reporter, Dalvin Brown. Okay, coming up, governments want social media companies to stop children from going on their platforms. The companies say that requires a lot of data. We'll explain after the break.
This message comes from Wall Street Journal sponsor C3 AI. Insights. You need them to solve business problems, but buried in volumes of disparate data, they're seemingly invisible. C3 Generative AI enables business leaders to instantly access secure, hallucination-free, verifiable insights from a unified knowledge source, all with a natural language search. Turn the invisible into the obvious with C3 Generative AI. Learn more at c3.ai.
Across the U.S. and Europe, local and national governments are trying to tighten online age restrictions on social media. It comes as growing evidence emerges that companies aren't effectively enforcing limits on what children see and do on these platforms. Joining me to talk about this is our European tech reporter, Sam Schechner. Sam, before we get into the efforts by lawmakers, can you tell us a bit more about what's driving this?
Well, a major thing that's driving this is that a lot of kids use social media, even though they're actually below the minimum age in the US and well below in some other parts of the world where the minimum age is higher. We looked at surveys from the US, but also from other countries, Ireland, the UK, France, that show in some cases up to a third of kids, or sometimes even we're talking half or more of kids ages 8 to 12 have accounts on at least one social media service.
I mean, in the US, most social media companies set the age limit at 13. What do advocates worry that children under 13 or maybe even over 13 might come across if they're on these social media platforms?
There's definitely the concern that there's some content that wouldn't be adapted to kids. You know, a lot of social media sites, if they believe that a user is under 18, restrict some of the content that they're shown. But, you know, given that there isn't age verification, sometimes kids could sign up even with adult accounts. And so you could end up with content that could be pornographic. And, you know, there's surveys showing that children are getting bullied online or worse, meeting strangers or having other kinds of things befall them.
What have the social media companies said about having these young users on their platforms?
The companies say that they don't want them on their platforms, that they have rules against it, and that they try to keep them from getting onto the platform. In some cases, they've set up dedicated services for younger kids that have even more restrictions on the types of content and restrictions on gathering any data about those kids without consent from their parents.
What are some of the challenges that the companies say they face in enforcing their own policies around age?
That's a really good question because, you know, my colleague Jeff and I actually did some research on this. We, you know, looked around, for instance, on Instagram. It wasn't that hard to find accounts where kids were openly identifying themselves as being under 13, which definitely raises the question of whether or not the companies really are effectively enforcing their own policies. But by the same token, when you push them on it, they say, well, what could we do? How could we better check without gathering a lot of data about your children in order to infer what their age is, or requiring ID, or using, you know, facial age estimation, which basically uses a camera to scan someone's face and guess what age they are.
Okay, so that's some of the challenges. Let's talk about what lawmakers are doing to try and address this. Can you give us some examples of some of the steps they've taken?
Across the U.S., there's a lot of states that have either introduced bills to mandate age verification and parental consent for the use of social media when you're under 18, or have even passed laws. In the state of Utah, they passed a law that would require age verification and parental consent. Arkansas has passed a similar law. And in general, they want the companies to take basically technical measures to verify or assure that the ages that people are declaring when they sign up for a service are in fact their real ages, to take that extra step because there is some evidence that kids are definitely getting past the filter.
And what have the social media companies said about complying with those sorts of restrictions?
I mean, the companies say that they will comply with the laws. Some of them say, listen, frankly, we think that this is something that's better done at the device level, that an Apple phone, you know, the iOS or Google's Android should actually be responsible for verifying ages and then passing the information that somebody is old enough along to the apps.
So are there other suggestions then for keeping children safe if they are on social media, or to prevent them from getting on social media in the first place?
I think there's various points of view. I mean, if you speak to some digital rights activists and they say that maybe the dangers are overblown and that really, in a sense, what we have now is maybe good enough. You talk to some child advocates and they would say that's definitely not the case. And a middle ground may be some future technologies based on this idea of age estimation, if it could become more accurate and if it were, say, analyzed on somebody's device so that there weren't any images actually sent anywhere or anything that was stored anywhere. On the other hand, civil liberties activists say that any kind of facial scanning is likely to have a chilling effect on access to information, both from teenagers and adults who legitimately ought to be able to access it, but might be scared off by the potential they could be identified.
All right, that's our European tech reporter, Sam Schechner. And that's it for today's Tech News Briefing. If you want more tech stories, check out our website, WSJ.com. And if you like our show, please leave us a 5-star rating and a review wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Zoe Thomas from The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.
This message comes from Wall Street Journal sponsor C3 AI. C3 Generative AI equips enterprises with verified, traceable answers. It's secure, hallucination-free, LLM agnostic, and IP liability-free. Learn more at c3.ai. This is Enterprise AI.